91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. Today's At Your Service edition concerns South Florida Condominium and Homeowners Associations. Good afternoon, Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. We feature contributor Donna Ballman, an attorney who specialized in condo, timeshare, mobile homes, and homeowner associations for decades. Today's focus is on proposals in the current Florida legislative session. There are numerous association-related bills under consideration, with possible impacts on board term limits and criminal penalties to volunteer board members if needed. We'll take listener questions by phone or email as well. Topical Currents up next. First, NPR and regional news. Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman with today's Topical Currents. Glad you could join us. Today's At Your Service focus is homeowner and condominium associations with frequent contributor, attorney Donna Berger. She experienced in the issues surrounding these important associations.
Also timeshares, cooperatives, and mobile homes. She's a partner in the law firm of Becker and Polyakov and writes for the Florida Condo and HOA Law blog, among other outlets.
And, of course, we'll be taking your questions later in the program. Welcome back, Donna Berger. Lots of things are going on with the state legislature and condo and homeowners associations.
But before we get to those, it's fortuitous your visit comes when these bills are, you know, pending in the Florida legislature. But to put them in context, I thought we'd best talk about the report on the Condo Association, scathing report issued last month by the Miami-Dade grand jury. So tell us about that report.
Well, first of all, thanks for having me. It's good to
be
back again. Hello. Well, the Miami-Dade grand jury report was really an analysis, and it's almost a throwback to a House Select Committee that was convened back in 2007, and that Select Committee met in five different locations around the state to receive public input about any issues concerning people living in condos and cooperatives and homeowners associations, but mostly condos and cooperatives. We have 1.6 million condos in Florida today, and 38% of them are in Miami-Dade and Broward counties. What the grand jury reported on several months ago was that they found that the division, the Department of Business and Professional Regulation, specifically the Division of Condominiums, Cooperatives, and Timeshares, was not up to the task of responding to all of these issues that do crop up. However, it still is interesting to realize that even back in 2007, of the 1.4 million condo units that were in existence, there were less than 1% of those condo owners that ever filed a complaint. That's not to say that there's not problems, because the Miami-Dade grand jury report has revealed some problems when it comes to election fraud, when it comes to document inspection requests, and other operational issues in associations.
I just wanted to ask, this Department of Business and Professional Regulation, they came down hard on them. They said, I mean, was that a shortage of manpower on their part because there's been such rapid growth, or is there an ineptitude on their part? And what's, or is it something else?
Well, they have 33 investigators throughout the state. I believe 13 or 14, maybe even 12, are dedicated to Miami-Dade, but it is most definitely linked to a lack of resources. I don't know how many of your listeners know that for the past 8 years, the Florida Condominium Trust Fund has been raided, and that's to the tune of over $20 million has been swept from the Condominium Trust Fund and applied elsewhere in the budget, and we anticipate it happening again this year. So at the end of the session, and when they're going through the budget, they see this pot of money that's paid in $4 per door by every condominium and cooperative owner in the state.
And they can use the money for
and
other things?
And they seize it. And they exactly also...
What is it supposed to be used for?
It's supposed to be used for enforcement and education.
So enforcement inspectors. By the Department of Business and Professional
Correct.
Regulation.
So it's not surprising that the division might be having some hiccups due to the lack of resources. They also had some arbitrators quit last year because over a pay dispute, claiming that they were paid 50% less than their counterparts in other state agencies. So one of the things that, you know, when we get into the proposed legislation that came out of this Miami-Dade grand jury report, I was disappointed to see that bill did not take into account the underlying infrastructure problems. It addressed some of the symptoms, but it didn't address the underlying problems, which is the lack of resources. And it failed to safeguard the resources once again.
So what can be done about that? Do people have to write to their representative or state senator?
Absolutely, and say we want the funds that we pay into the state that's supposed to go towards enforcement and education, because it's twofold. You also want to help educate people who are serving on these boards. We want those monies to be safeguarded for those purposes and not applied elsewhere in the state's budget.
There was one thing in this report. It says that if there's clear evidence of electoral fraud, condo elections should be nullified. So I wanted to ask, first of all, what constitutes electoral fraud, and how do you find clear evidence that there's been fraud, and what's happening with online voting?
Have you ever been to a condo election?
Yes.
Is it clear? Is there anything clear going on?
No.
Many of the problems we see relate to judgment calls. So with the current paper system, particularly in a condominium, you have an outer envelope that the owner's supposed to sign and put their unit number so you know who's voting. And inside is a secret ballot with an envelope that is supposed to have no markings. Now, do people do this correctly?
No.
No, they do not. So many of the judgment calls are you get an envelope, it's not signed, it's not fully signed, you can't tell whose signature it is. You may have a proxy stuck in with the ballot in the inner one. There may be no inner envelope. It may just be a folded up ballot stuck inside the outer envelope. These are all judgment calls that we're asking either the manager to make or a volunteer director. So when you talk about clear evidence, I would challenge somebody to come up with some clear evidence of a problem.
Well, that's my point. So, and also sometimes they ask other people just who are not board members to count votes and to, you know,
the counting committee. So you have those people making judgment calls.
Yes.
I was recently at a Miami-Dade election, and we had an election monitor, and he was asking me and the counting people and everybody else, what do you think? Huh. So there's a lot of confusion. Your point about online voting is a good one, though. The Miami-Dade grand jury report reflected there is still problems with elections. And one of the solutions was intended to be online voting. Well, we haven't even allowed that. It's only been in place for a year. Okay, most associations are not yet using it, but many, many are contemplating the use of online voting. So why not let that gel, that legislative change gel? And I do have a recommendation about online voting and election fraud, which would be currently only the board can vote to implement online voting, to offer it as an option. And if election fraud is of particular concern, then perhaps we allow a certain percentage of the owners insist on casting a ballot electronically if they don't trust the paper system, if they don't trust that judgment call going on.
Yeah, I mean, it's like hanging chads.
Right. Well, there's no judgment call with an online ballot. You click and it goes.
Right. So, but now something would have to change where it just couldn't be.
I would have liked to have seen that in Senator Garcia's bill that we're going to talk about.
All right.
Senator Rene Garcia, Republican state senator. His bill, SB 1682, could you give us the thumbnail of that?
Wow, how much time do we have left in the program? it's a pretty big bill. There are parts of the bill that are fairly innocuous. They don't do any harm. They may do some good. There's parts that are fairly bad and will create ripple effects, negative ripple effects. And then there's a few parts that are just weird. Which ones do you want to start? You want to start with the good, the bad, or the ugly?
Start with the criminalization. It would criminalize certain behaviors by a member of the board of directors.
Okay, so we're starting with the ugly section.
With the ugly section.
With the ugly section. Here's the problem. I don't know. I have not spoken to anyone in the industry, whether it's a director, a manager, a professional advisor, who doesn't think that people who are committing crimes should be punished. If you're committing a crime, whether it's embezzlement, whether it's forgery, theft, you should be subject to swift sanctions. However, the problem here is, let me just go through it. Any director who knowingly, willfully, and repeatedly violates provisions regarding a document inspection request can be subject to a misdemeanor of the second degree. By the way, that includes up to 60 days jail time.
Okay.
Do you know how many document inspection requests I've seen derailed? Not because anybody intended to do something wrong, but because things get off track. I've seen owners not show up for appointments they make. Does that mean that they've been denied access when they make an appointment and they don't show up? I've seen document inspection requests hidden in a 17-paragraph email where the first 11 paragraphs were a rant against the board and how bad they are, and then tucked into the 12th paragraph is a, by the way, I want to see the documents, and then resuming. Most people don't even get to that. So there has to be some...
More of a formal way of addressing, of requesting those documents.
If you are going to criminalize something like a document inspection request, you have to have a full understanding of how those requests take place, how they're made, and how they get off track. And sometimes they get off track because the owner's playing a game of gotcha with the board or the manager, and they want it to get off track. And that's not always the case. You do have some boards that are not forthcoming with the documents. But I always tell boards and managers, the documents belong to the owners, not the boards. Those are the owner's documents. But there's certain documents in there that are naturally privileged that you have to be careful.
So do you think, I think everybody would agree that if there is something going on that's criminal behavior, that should be punished. Mm-hmm. But do you think that this bill, were it to be passed, would have some unintended consequences?
To say the least. For instance, this bill includes a list of fraudulent voting activities that can be punishable as a third-degree felony. By the way, 5-year prison term. And that would include making those judgment calls. So it says anybody who fraudulently changes or attempts to change a vote could be committing a felony. Well, I've seen unit owners go down to an association office and tell the manager, I made a mistake. I want to change my vote. Now, if that manager hands over that ballot and allows them, did that manager just commit a felony?
Well, aren't they supposed to give them a new ballot?
In Florida, once that ballot is cast, you're done.
You're done. Okay.
And you bet. And by the way, if any of this goes through, this criminalization of everyday board operations, you better be sure you're educating everyone. Right now, our firm does educational classes. The state does. Other firms do. Management companies do. But clearly, it's not enough.
And as a board member, responsible for what the board may do, say the board president is the one who's crooked and hides his foibles, and yet you might be responsible just because you're sitting on a board as a volunteer and be subject to criminal
activity. You very well could. So to Bonnie's point with regard to the ripple effects, you may want to think twice. Even if you don't serve jail time, you might not want it on your record.
So you might not want to serve on a board.
It might fall under the category of no good deed going unpunished. To say I just don't want to risk that. We also haven't talked about the fact that many boards abdicate these responsibilities to the professional managers they hire. That's why you typically hire professional management to handle document inspection requests, to handle the elections, to handle all those different operational.
Right. So it would be the manager who would be culpable, not the
not under this
board
law.
Director.
Not under this law.
So you're not against Senate Bill 1682 entirely.
Oh.
You're just against certain aspects of what they're trying to criminalize.
I'm absolutely not against the bill in terms of its intent to make reforms, but we can do a lot better than what this bill currently does.
Well, are they willing to amend it?
You know, bills typically go through the amendment process. For instance, I'd like to see, I think you can do away with many of the problems if you require documents to be digitized and available online. You know, many associations, the problem is they come with this big junk drawer of documents,
right,
and people can't sift through it. I'd like to have seen this bill take a different focus in terms of safeguarding state resources and making it easier for people to see the documents because they're digitized and online.
I suppose there's a House companion to this bill.
There is a House companion. It's moving through the committee. They're both moving through the committee process. They have to line up at the end of the road, and then it would go to the governor. But we're trying to work with the sponsor, and other groups are trying to work with the sponsor. The Florida Bar has come out and expressed some significant concerns about certain aspects of the bill. So we'll see what happens.
Well, we have other bills to discuss. We're going to open the phones and open the emails.
Our phone number, if you'd like to call in with a question or comment concerning condo and homeowners association, 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-WLRN.
And emails, we've gotten several emails starting on Friday when the promo for this program started playing, airing. And many of them are way too long.
And so too involved.
They're too involved, they're too long, and they're too specific. So if you have written an email and you'd like to rephrase it and make it so that it's two or three lines, you're welcome to do that.
A short paragraph or two.
Yeah, short paragraph or two. We're speaking with Donna DiMaggio-Berger. She's a shareholder in the Community Association Practice Group of Becker and Polyakoff.
And that's radio at WLRN.org.
Radio at WLRN.org. Okay.
Okay. HB 653, Representative Moraitis.
Oh, that's a bill that is of extreme importance to older high-rises throughout Florida. We've talked before on this program about sprinkler systems.
And opting out.
And opting out. And as you know, the deadline passed December 31st, 2016. But what happened is all these associations, all these existing older high-rises who thought they had opted out of sprinkler system and kind of dodged a bullet, then had the fire marshal knocking on their door and saying, guess what, you got to put in sprinklers. Because now they're part of an engineered life safety system or an ELSS. So it felt to a lot of these residents, not just boards, residents, that there was a bait and switch. So this bill, Representative Moraitis' bill, attempts to address that issue by not only allowing associations who had not taken that sprinkler opt-out vote to take it, but to allow them also to opt out of the ELSS. I should say the bill also clarifies that low and mid-rise buildings were not required to retrofit, and I jokingly call this the original fake news, because the Palm Beach Post had an article that was interpreted to say that low and mid rises had to install and retrofit with sprinkler systems because they had the right to opt out, but they were never. It's 75 feet.
75 feet. So that's how many stories?
Seven.
All right.
But an engineered life safety system doesn't necessarily have to mean new sprinklers.
It always, you know what, Joe? It means different things to different local authorities, depending on where you live in Florida.
Could be a good evacuation plan.
It could. Well, no, there's always, trust me, there's always very pricey components to it, but there has never been an ELSS that did not include a sprinkler component. Typically, it's just one sprinkler head inside the entry of the unit or in the kitchen, but you still have that whole host of problems with how do you get the water to the sprinklers. A lot of ELSSs also include pressurized corridors, self-locking doors. There's a lot of other components to them, but the sticking point for many associations that opted out of sprinklers is that the ELSS has a sprinkler component.
Right.
It's not going to be, you know, and you're still looking at costs that for many high-rises will exceed $1 million. So you've got people in these buildings that are looking at significant outlays of cost. Again, every time you look at legislation, it's sort of a mixed bag, because no one's saying that life safety is not important and should not be, you know, forefront, but we're saying whether or not there should be an option to opt out.
Right, just or not because of financial concerns. Okay, Senate Bill 398, we have an email about it, so will you talk about, first of all, what it is? It's the one about the estoppel certificates.
Oh, the estoppel certificates. So this bill has been around, I think it's been up and about for the last 4 or 5 years in one iteration or another. So I should start out by saying an estoppel certificate is a document that is requested whenever property is being sold or purchased. And the purpose or function of an estoppel certificate is to say, what's owed on this unit? I need to know. How much is owed in regular assessments? How much is owed in terms of special assessments? As a purchaser, I want to know what am I getting myself into.
So everybody's entitled to one.
Everybody's entitled to one. What the reason for this legislation, again, this year, is that you had Most people producing these estoppel certificates are charging around $100 to $300, anywhere from the $100 range to the $300 range to prepare them. Because there is some labor that goes into it. You have to go into the ledgers and you have to prepare the form. There were some people that were charging $700 or $800. And that became the problem, because without that estoppel certificate, you cannot close. So particularly when it came to the banks, who have a very strong lobby, they felt like their closings were being held up. So this bill is out again this year. It seeks to put a cap of $250 on the preparation fee for the estoppel certificate. And there was something that they pushed back hard against. Associations right now can charge for that fee at the time they do it, whether they're doing it or managers doing it.
Well, who gets it, the management or the condo?
No, it depends on who. Manager typically prepares it. If you're professionally managed, you typically have your management company prepare that.
If they don't work for the condo association.
Who gets it is the closing agent. Correct. Who gets it is the closing agent. But the bill originally wanted to say you couldn't get paid until you closed. And what happens a lot of times is these transactions don't close. So that was a big problem with that bill. That has since
been... So those who prepare don't get paid.
Correct.
Right.
If it doesn't close. But that's since been taken out of the bill. So that's been fixed.
All right.
So you're neutral on this bill.
On the estoppel certificate bill? You know, frankly, I thought it was a problem in search of a solution. Wasn't that big of a issue from what I saw from the associations we work with. Apparently, some banks felt otherwise. As long as it's reasonable and you're allowing people to collect up front and you're allowing them to charge a reasonable fee,
a couple of hundred dollars.
It's another indication, though, Joe, right, and Bonnie, that if you don't self-regulate, you will be regulated.
And before we begin to take calls or take emails, SB 1186 in the Florida legislature.
This is about rental restrictions and Airbnb.
Right. Airbnb, that's a big one here, particularly in Miami-Dade. The HOA rental restriction bill just seeks to transport over into the HOA Act the language that we've had in the Condominium Act for years now, which grandfathers in rental rights. And basically it says that if a homeowners association wishes to pass any restrictions on rentals, in terms of a minimum or a maximum number of times you can rent a year or a lease term, it's only going to apply to existing owners who vote yes and new owners who take title after the amendment is recorded in the public records. So if I live there and I don't vote at all, it's not going to apply to me. It only will apply to existing owners who vote yes. Obviously, it creates a bit of a housekeeping nightmare for associations to keep track of which existing owners have voted yes on that amendment. And, you know, funny story, that the genesis for 718-110-13, which is the language in the Condominium Act, was Senate President Jim King at the time had a friend, a wealthy guy from Maine, who came down, bought a vacation home in Florida. At the time, there were no rental restrictions in his condo community. While he owned the unit, the rental restrictions were imposed. More than a majority of his neighbors wanted to pass those restrictions. But this guy thought, you know what? I don't like that. When I bought here, I could rent. And I don't care if I'm on the losing end of this vote. I want to keep renting. So he went to his friend, the Senate president at the time, and said, there ought to be a law. And the law was passed. And that's how
but
a lot of
if he voted
our,
yes.
Yeah, he didn't want it to apply to him.
So he should just be grandfathered in.
Right. And it overturned 30 years of case law in the state of Florida. That's how laws are made here.
Okay. Well, let me just quick do an email. Suzanne wants to know who should receive the estoppel fees that the management company charges on unit closings, the management company or the condo association. So
Suzanne, that is going to be dictated by the terms and provisions of your management agreement. And you also, if this bill passes, you're going to need to look at your management agreements, because if your management company is charging more than what the ultimate cap winds up being, if this bill passes, they may want the association to pick up the excess fees as a common expense. So it really depends on the terms of your management agreement, whether or not they're collecting that on behalf of the association and remitting it to the association, or the manager is collecting that and that's a source of revenue for them.
And she also wants to know if they're allowed to charge a delinquent owner a late fee to offset the cost of having to send a delinquent letter.
Well, that's different. The statute allows a late fee on the delinquent assessment, $25 or 5% of the delinquent installment. What she's actually talking about is what we call a pre-litigation attorney's fee provision, which would say, look, even if we don't get to the level of arbitration or mediation or litigation, we want to charge you for what we have to pay our attorney. So those are two different things. But per the statute, you can charge a late fee on the delinquent assessment.
Okay. All right. We're speaking with attorney Donna Berger about homeowner associations, etc. We'll be right back.
And we're back, Topical Currents, Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and Condominium Association, Homeowner Association expert and attorney, Donna Berger. And we're taking your calls. Also, before we go to calls and emails, Donna, let's touch on the term limits aspect for board members of the legislation.
Which is in Senate Bill 1682.
Correct. And it does say a board member may not serve more than 4 consecutive 2-year terms unless approved by an affirmative vote of 2/3 of the owners to continue on with their
so
very
call that
pleasant
the supermajority.
Supermajority. And you know how easy it is to get a supermajority of members in an association
to agree on anything.
I mean, again, I think that this is a disconnect in Tallahassee about the way boards run, okay?
Because not that many people want to do it, and if you do have someone who's good.
I'm not saying you never have somebody who's clinging on to the board because that's their reason for life.
Right.
But more often than not, you've got people because no one who are serving long terms, long sentences on the board.
Because no one else wants to do it.
Nobody else wants to take them. I will tell you one other thing about 1682 before the calls. The financial report, this really struck me. In this bill, it says, if the association has not mailed or hand-delivered the most recent financial report within 5 business days to an owner who requests same, then the owner can report them to the division. If they don't comply with that, then the members cannot waive the financial reporting requirement. And it costs money to prepare financial reports. What struck me on this is 5 business days. Think about this. In a community with 200, 300, 400 members, one member sends you one email. Remember the email I told you? The 15 paragraph James Joyce size paragraph with one sentence in there that says, I want to see the financial report. Now, do you think a manager, let's say this association's professionally managed, do you think they're doing something else in those 5 days, like paying bills, scheduling repairs, operating the community, answering phone calls? I mean, a 5 business day to respond to one owner on that.
You know what I'm thinking? I think the whole idea of condos and co-ops, I think it doesn't work. Nope.
Maybe we should just abolish them.
I think that's it. How many are there in Dayton Broward, did you say?
1.6 million.
Okay, I think that's it.
Let's take some calls. We've got Phil in Alapata. He's been on the phone a long time. Thanks for your patience. Hi, Phil.
Oh, hi, Joe.
Go ahead.
I was evicted from my condo at Southwood. Now I live in a trailer in a real junkyard in Alapata. That's all I could afford now, but our condo was taken over by a criminal entity, and it has been nothing but fraud, money laundering, embezzlement. They threw away the books. We have no books. They threw them away. We've got nothing. And I was evicted, even though I have a contract that's still good until 11/2017. I mean, Donna's association she deals with seems fine, but there's a lot of criminals out there.
Phil, you're absolutely right. Well, let me ask you, did you live in a condominium association?
A condominium association.
Okay, how large was it, Phil?
It was 154 total units.
Professionally managed?
<It's>
or is that a trick question?
Don't take it literally. Just
I didn't say fraudulently really. Managed. I said
in
professional.
Name.
In name. Were they
supposedly, how's that?
Okay, and your board was doing these things. Was there ever an attempt to recall the board or to file a complaint with the division?
We tried the DBPR, and they are neutered and useless. They refused to come down because they said it was too far. We were in Cutler Ridge. They're in, Hollandale or something? I mean, there's no recourse. They were able to basically dance on our graves, and the courts let them. And Judge Jennifer Bailey lets these lawyers do whatever they want. And I told her of the theft, the embezzlement, the destruction of evidence. They don't care.
Well,
you're
honestly,
at the will of thieves. I mean, and it's just like it's, my God, you know. I mean, I was suicidal, but now I got a trailer in a junkyard. So I'm fine.
I swear to God,
I'm in the middle of a junkyard.
That is not the most pleasant picture of condo life in Florida. But Phil, I'm glad you're happier now.
Okay, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Joe Martinez is the devil.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks for calling.
This is nice. An issue that provokes a lot of
yes.
emotion. Let's see. Let's go
How
to...
How bad does it have to be to be have the junkyard be a step up?
It had to be pretty bad. That's where SB 1682 maybe would come in handy.
If we can get it in a workable format, sure.
Next up, Billy in North Miami Beach. Billy, hi.
Hey, and I'm glad you gave me time to calm down with by listening to the show and that, because there are so many problems with my condominium. I have been there 25 years, and the last 8 or so years have just been absolute hell. I have heard stories that the association has actually cornered residents and told them that if they went along with, we have a savior in our building who's fighting the board, and it's tooth and nail all the way up in that. And they've started every roadblock in front of this poor man. He tried to run for the board, and some erroneous reason was given to him why he couldn't run for the board in that. And people that were secretly coming to his apartment, and these are stories, alleged stories in that. And I have to say that just to protect myself. They were told that if they went along with him, that they would have hell to pay in that. The intimidation, it was like watching a 1930s gangster movie in that. So anything that I can do as a resident of a condo for you, volunteer-wise, please put out a number that we can get a hold of you or an email on that, because I really want to help you support this.
Billy, have you ever run for the board?
I was the president back in we had a president that put us in receivership without coming to the association.
Mm-hmm.
After the state spent all of our money and said that they had put in security, and but we never had it, and used for legal fees, and that after we were broke, they gave the building back to us, and nobody wanted to be president, so I took over for like about 6 months. Mm-hmm. Then they found out that I found $60,000 and a CD at a bank, at Barnett Bank, and that all, there you go, everybody wanted to be on the board to be the president, and they said that I had stolen money from it. They did 2 audits with me. I'm glad that I had the smarts to have officer's insurance. They defended me. It turned out that after the 2 audits and $15,000 later, they found out that the building owed me $325 for an electric bill that I had paid on my own to keep the lights on.
Well, you raise a couple of good issues. The certainly having audited financial report each year, you know, as opposed to waiving it, is important.
Absolutely.
You know, so you can keep track of it. Running for the board, participating. Sometimes, listen, I'm representing a couple individual owners right now who have concerns about their board, and I'm sitting and I'm talking to them. Some of their concerns are entirely legitimate. Others, you know, I think it's maybe a little bit of unreasonable expectations on their part, but you're absolutely right. There are times, there are certain associations that are just more vulnerable to this type of thing, particularly associations with a lot of out-of-state or out-of-the-country owners, where you don't have people here, you don't have those checks and balances in place. Mm-hmm. Fraud is going to take hold in communities that are much more vulnerable, because you've got people who are not attending the meetings, you don't have checks and balances in place, you've got a lot of out-of-state.
So they could be voting from out of the country.
Correct. You know, which is, again, getting back to online voting and why that may be very helpful to get these people a little more involved with the important decisions. But Billy, all I would say is I'm sorry to hear that you're not the first person. I've represented owners against boards as well, so I understand the difficulties from that side of the fence, too.
You know, you have an army out here that's just waiting to be led, so please give us some kind of way to contact you or your group or anybody that's going in that direction, and I'll hang up and listen to your response. Thank you so much.
Okay, great. Thank you for calling. Okay.
An army. Well, an army. You know, we need, it's great to have people involved, and it's that type of passion that can make change, but again, passion without an overall strategy and some deliberate thought can wind up in more problems. Like, you know, 1682 is very reflective of the passion right now about some of the problems, but we need to have an injection of, okay, well,
why don't they add online voting, that everybody has to do online voting?
Well, you don't want, there's a monetary aspect to it, but certainly if a certain percentage of owners can request to have an election monitor and have it paid as a common expense, why wouldn't you have a certain percentage of owners request to have an online voting? Because I will tell you, some associations don't want online voting because, you know, it may be too inclusive.
You mean it may be too honest?
Maybe. I'm not saying it may be too honest, but it may be too inclusive.
It's like some of these huge buildings where the stakes are so high, you couldn't rule out hacking either.
Well, you know, let's talk about the skill set needed to interrupt a ballot, an electronic ballot in transit.
Sorry, versus
the skill set needed to throw out a ballot.
Right. Okay, here, James is on the board of directors. Long-established rule in his condo, owners may not have a dog weighing more than 25 pounds at maturity unless specifically approved by the board of directors. We have been approached by the prospective purchaser of a unit asserting that although her dog is considerably larger than 25 pounds, it is a comfort dog and therefore must be approved by the board. What are the FHA requirements relating to comfort animals, and perhaps more importantly, what are the board's rights to make inquiries regarding whether the prospective purchaser is subject to some condition which warrants the designation of a comfort dog?
Oh, it's funny how everybody's German Shepherd morphs into a comfort support,
I hadn't heard
emotional support animal.
Emotional support, but these are not service animals, which is a whole different thing.
There is a difference. A service animal has a specific set of skills. Those animals have been trained to treat specific disabilities. For instance, vision impairment, mobility impairment, hearing impairment, seizure disorder. I recently had a request in the community for a diabetic alert dog. And those dogs are trained mm-hmm. to let their owners know when their glucose levels
Whoa.
Drop. Now, okay, so those are the dogs
service animals
that went to college and maybe even graduate school. Then we have the emotional support animals, and they're not just dogs or horses. Under the ADA, Americans with Disabilities Act, they only recognize dogs and miniature horses as service animals. Under the Fair Housing Amendments Act, it's with emotional support animals, I've seen a pig, snakes, birds, dogs, cats, all forms of reptiles, anything really that provides comfort to the person. To answer this question, I think it's fairly obvious to most of us that there are people that will game the system, that they want to move in, that there may be pet restrictions, that are strictly enforced and upheld, but they know now that if they whip out this emotional support animal card, it's very, very difficult.
Which is issued, by a veterinarian?
Well, you need a medical professional. That's another question. What if it's somebody in Canada?
Also, his thing, how much can they inquire into why this person needs a comfort animal and their HIPAA laws? They
be
can't
careful.
Really inquire.
Here's my response. Be careful in terms of your inquiries because it can subject the association to a discrimination lawsuit. Mm. You need to reach out to experienced counsel. I've done policies that say when we receive a service animal or emotional support animal request, we're turning it over to our association attorney and let the attorney look at the request, verify whether it's legitimate. If there's anything else that is needed, dialogue with the attorney. Because for volunteer board members or managers to try to toe this line between what's an acceptable inquiry, like how many times have you seen this doctor? Where did you
and
get?
And what are you getting? And what are you seeing the doctor for?
Be very careful. Be very, very careful. The pendulum has swung very far in the direction of people who want these animals as opposed to people who may have moved into communities expecting and hoping and needing to be in a pet-free building because they have their own issues, either allergies or phobias, fears, you name it. But unfortunately, the rights of the people who want them are a lot more protected right now.
I think single-family home is looking pretty good right now.
Maybe Dr. Carson will solve the problem now that he's in charge of HUD.
Okay. We're speaking with Donna Berger, attorney Donna Berger, with the law firm of Becker and Polyakov about condo and homeowner associations, and we'll be right back.
And we're back. Topical Currents, Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and attorney Donna Berger from the law firm of Becker and Polyakov. Our topic is condominium associations and homeowners associations. We go back to our callers. John, North Miami. Hi, go ahead.
Hi, how are you? I'm on a board on a condo that's winding down a lawsuit where three or four other owners trying to take over for nefarious reasons, for financial reasons. And it's now winding down, and our insurance agent, our insurance provider, provided our lawyers that has done a remarkable job, but when it winds down now, it looks like they're just going to abandon the lawsuit. Can we have our insurers countersuit for us to recoup the cost, even though it didn't cost us money out of pocket, but yet it's treated a hit on our reputation with it. Getting a new insurer, they dropped us after they're providing for us. But when we were re-upped, they
Well, John, it's really a cost to doing business, sitting on a board. I mean, if there's anything that you take away, it is a thankless job. It's a thankless job sitting on the board. It can be frustrating to not be on the board and living in the community. And I think those are the two different perspectives in most communities. In terms of your question, if you didn't prevail in the lawsuit, then you wouldn't be entitled to prevailing party attorney's fees and costs. You have to prevail first. It's very hard to opine on the specifics of your litigation without knowing. It sounds like the board was sued, insurance, you had coverage, so insurance defense handled. That would be a discussion for you to have with insurance defense counsel as to whether or not any sort of counter claim was appropriate. But, you know, you have to understand that when you sit on the board, you are subject to that type of thing. You need a couple things to sit on a condominium board or HOA board in Florida. You need adequate directors and officers coverage, and you need thick skin. Does it mean?
Oh, absolutely. It's just when you have it's the craziness that has gone on. I've only been here for a few years, and I own my own house, and this is my first go around being in a condo, and it's politics, and it really has made Seinfeld, the TV show, a lot more funnier. I mean, literally, I now sit there, and it's like they polish the episodes off, and I see how the parents go through the presidency and gets thrown out. Everything is so much more funnier.
Sounds like a show in the waiting.
Yeah, Boca Villa or something.
Boca del Vista.
Yeah. Boca Vista.
Okay, all right, John, thanks for calling.
One last question. With the person that really has driven this lawsuit, and he's really kind of tarnished himself with everybody. Can an owner be voted out by the association or by vote, seeing that someone has done financial harm to the...
You mean like voted? Do you mean like voted out of the community, like Survivor, where you're voted off the island?
Yes, to get sold, to sell their condo.
No, you can't. Listen, if this particular owner is delinquent, you can proceed to foreclose. If this particular owner is just a disgruntled person, you need to manage it like a chronic disease. You're not going to cure it. It's a personality thing. You're not going to be able to take away somebody's real property rights, except in the most egregious circumstances where they're presenting a threat to the health, safety, or welfare. So I wouldn't look at it like we're going to be able to vote them off the island. You're going to need to manage it. Some communities manage that by putting that type of personality on a committee. Others just, you know, they deal with it. And that gets back to the thick skin. I understand the frustration because I have clients that have dealt with that. And when you're dealing with the human factor and personality conflict, it is the law does not provide you the tools you need. You probably need a psychologist to come in and help.
So you should start a committee for the disgruntled and he can be the chair.
Oh, I'm telling you, I could sell pitchforks at these meetings. I could sell, you know, it's amazing how, the anxiety that goes on.
One last comment. When you do have that personality type in your community, best way to get it under control is to pass comprehensive rules regarding inspection of books and records and participation at meetings.
Okay.
We have to run.
We have to go, John.
Thank you very much.
If the only doors providing egress from building other than elevator to front door are also fire doors, can the board restrict use to emergencies only? Doors set off a small buzzer in office only, not the fire alarm.
I think that's a conversation to have with the local fire marshal. I mean, whatever actions or policies or decisions the board makes needs to be reasonable. So it's hard to tell from that email what the board's attempting to do. Are they attempting to keep the doors shut or keep them open?
Okay. I guess they're attempting to keep them shut and not being able to use.
If it's a board policy, it's tied to a reasonableness standard. So they need to have when asked why is this the policy, they need to have a reasonable answer.
Okay.
We're very short on time. We go to Mary Ann in Miami. Hi.
Hi. I'm calling with reference to the condo I live in, and the problem or the situation we have here is we have at least four or five hotel rooms located in our lobby to accommodate guests of the unit owners. Now, they have to pay for them, but at the same time, we have a general manager who recently we went under renovations of our building. For 2 years, in his contract, he was allowed to stay in one of the hotel rooms, which is the biggest hotel room. It's oversized. And he was allowed to stay there, rent-free, of course, inclusive of his contract. Now, the renovations have been over, and unknown to the unit owners, they renewed his contract with a provision that he could stay here for another 2 years. Now, the revenue that that's generated from these rooms contribute to the overhead of the condo.
Yeah, Mary, we're short on time.
So they helped. I know where you're going, Mary Ann. They helped defray costs, and you're questioning the board's judgment in giving up this. Unfortunately, boards can make bad decisions at times, and they can make decisions that either defray costs and increase your revenue or do the opposite, which it sounds in this case you don't agree with it. It came within the authority of your elected board to do it. May not have been the best decision, and that's why get voted in and out.
But do they have the authority
typically
to do that?
Yes. When it comes to personnel decisions, that's the deal they made with that manager, whether or not that was the best deal for the association. That, you know, the recourse for the members is let's vote on another board.
You know, that's all they can do.
And then you have some owners that don't constantly second guess the board's decisions. But in this case, you know, she doesn't necessarily agree that giving up a prime hotel room.
It's not a hotel room.
Is what was needed to acquire this particular personnel.
And it's generating revenue for the.
It's a judgment call.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for your call.
Okay. I thank you.
Okay, our condo association is allowed to charge renters of units a security deposit for common areas, a reasonable sum not to exceed 1 month of rent. Recently raised from $1,000, 50% of the equal month, about 50% of the units are owned by investors renting out their units, and the rent amounts vary widely. Since the amount of rent has nothing to do with how much damage could be done, is 1 month of rent a reasonable sum?
Again, it's a judgment call. If the ability to take the security deposit up to 1 month rent is found in the recorded declaration, then according to Florida case law, it's already cloaked with the presumption of reasonableness, and the board doesn't have to prove the reasonableness.
They can just say it's reasonable.
They can just say it's the members voted on it, and it's reasonable.
Well, we want to thank you, Donna Berger from Becker and Polykoff. We wish we had...
We need more time.
I think next time what we're going to try to do is do a Facebook Live thing, and then we'll be able to continue after.
Stay on.
Donna DiMaggio Berger, attorney Donna DiMaggio Berger, is a shareholder in the Community Association Practice Group of Becker and Polykoff. We apologize profusely to the lots and lots of callers and emailers we did not get to. But next time we're going to try and extend the show.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And so we wrap up today's program, our At Your Service edition. Again, our apologies to those callers we couldn't get to. Our lead producer is Richard Ives, technical supervision by online producer Jason Zabka. Polly Landis is associate producer. Perhaps you missed part of the program. We have free audio archives at our website. That's WLRN.org. Follow the Topical Currents links. Also, info at the Topical Currents Facebook page. Also, you may listen at the iTunes podcast. Tomorrow's program, again, is an At Your Service edition hour. We'll have a call-in regarding pet care with veterinarian Dr. Ian Kupke and animal behavior expert Adele Miedes.
And does that include comfort pets and emotional support animals?
And condos, minions, and pets. Yeah, we'll get there. Also, a discussion of the proper and safest way to walk your dog. It's not unusual to encounter problems on the leash, of course. Or if your dog walks you. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Here and Now, next on NPR News.